Now, over the last couple of weeks on the show, I've done a lot of new things with my musical instruments. I've played my guitar on the podcast for the first time, and last week I played my recorder, a wind instrument used in Irish schools a lot. I played that for the first time in many, many years, and all that's left now is to play the two instruments at the same time, so I suppose here goes. Wish me luck. Now, I've discovered a little restriction here. I'm holding the recorder in my left hand, and it's like a flute or a tin whistle. It's really designed to use both hands. So I'm really restricted now to using the top three holes, which my left fingers can cover. But I suppose we'll get somewhere. I'm holding the guitar in my right hand. So excuse me if I don't use up all of the notes in the spectrum. I'm not fobbing off the other notes or trying purposely to alienate them. I love all of the notes in the spectrum. It's just that I can't reach them while I'm holding the guitar, so don't hold it against me. Anyway, here goes. For now, that's as far as we're going to get on the first attempt. I will practice this in my own time over the next few weeks. I'll take a bit as homework for the show, and I'll try and see if I can play some sort of a tune. Normally, the guitar is played at the same time as the banjo or some sort of other instrument that can be strapped to your head in some fashion. I saw Billy Joel do it a few weeks ago at a concert. He played Piano Man, and he was still playing the guitar and the mouth organ at the same time, and it was pretty cool. And I don't think anyone's played a wind instrument with holes in it, such as a flute or a recorder like this, at the same time as a guitar, neither of which they know how to play properly. And so I think it's my duty to give you a first and to advance the musical science as far as possible. There's no point in me just doing the same thing that Billy Joel does. I mean, he's perfected it. He does it wonderfully. The crowd went wild when he played Piano Man, and who am I to try to improve on what he does? So no, I'm just going to be original and invent something new, and if it doesn't sound great at first, well, just bear with me and we'll improve it. So we'll try something else again next time.
Into Your Head, your regular dollop of drivel from a pie town, Ireland, featuring Neil O'Carroll and me, Joanne Farrell.
Now, I feel now that we're at show number 11, we reached a certain point in the development of Into Your Head whereby I have to start considering laying down the rules and policies on certain issues, one of those being swearing. Now, I'm not the type who swears for no reason at all. I just don't like F words and B words and all those other C words like cunt and fuck and arse and all those. Technically, I suppose some of those aren't swear words. They're just the names of body parts or legal terms that describe people in certain legal situations as regards to their family. But no, I don't believe in just swearing for no reason. You need a good reason to swear. And I mean, even when you're in a court, for example, and they swear you in, they don't expect you to say, I fucking swear to tell the whole fucking truth and nothing but the truth. No, swearing has a whole different meaning in there, and they don't even do that on Judge Judy, as far as I can tell. They just go in and the commercial break ends and Judge Judy starts talking and asking, now what's the story here? Who did what to who? You crashed your car into his foot, and his foot is suing you for wearing down his skin. Is that correct? And you, madam, where do you come into this?
Well, I'm just suing him, Judge Judy, because I don't like him and I want money off him. And Judge Judy will of course respond by saying, "Well, that's completely reasonable. We'll get the fuck out of here." And that's as far as swearing goes, really, in our legal system. So, as regards swearing in a podcast, really, I'm at a loss as to how to go about laying down a policy, and I really just don't know. I suppose what I could do is record a few more shows, and just if I feel like swearing, if I feel so strongly about something, swearing is the only way I can get it across, then I suppose I'll just have to fucking swear then, and then we'll see what happens. And if it gets too much, I'll start reviewing it again and maybe censoring myself or something. I'm not really a censorship person, I must say, because if I operated a strict system of censorship here, half of what I've just said you wouldn't know about. And you, for example, if I'd censored myself, I might, for example, have bleeped out a bit where I said that I don't like censorship, because of course that would be a criticism of the whole censorship system, and you can't have a censorship system where people just criticize the censorship itself, because then you just have a vicious circle of you censoring people for talking about being censored, and then you have to censor them again because they spoke about the fact that you censored them for being censored them for talking about censoring, and that's just stupid. And as far as I'm concerned, there's another thing now called the census, and that's a completely different thing. We have here in Ireland around once every 5 years on a certain night, some guy calls around to your door with a big form, and you have to fill it in to see how many people are in each house. And this is what was going on the night Jesus was born. They all went to take part in the census in Bethlehem. Nowadays, you don't have to go to Bethlehem. The form is delivered to your letterbox, and you just have to fill it in on the set night, and someone comes and collects it a few days after that. And it's great. I mean, if the Jesus and Mary had a big problem with this, because they went to fill in the censorship form, and he said, "Jesus, this guy hasn't been born yet, and we don't even know if it's a boy or a girl, so do we put him or her on the form, or do we leave him out, or do we just say, you know, baby on board, you know, there's some water in the camel that's going to be squeezed out probably in the next 12 hours or so, but we're not sure about it." And we don't even know what the date of birth is going to be. Is it going to be born before midnight or after midnight? And we're in the Middle East or somewhere, so we're 5 hours ahead. So that means midnight is actually 5 a.m. So if he's born at 5 to midnight, it's already tomorrow. And you know, that's where does that leave you? That's just of no help to anyone whatsoever. But the whole thing about Jesus, where it brings me to my local news issue that I wanted to bring up with you. A few local shops here have decided to ban kids from using those new fancy running shoes that have wheels built into them. I don't know what the hell they're called. But you're not allowed to roll around on those things in the stores anymore. And I understand why kids want to do this. It's a rebellious thing, and it comes from back when Jesus started the whole thing by walking on water. Jesus used to go and walk on water, and it looked pretty cool. There was a bit of a magic trick, and he was the first of his family to do it. Now, I had a point here that was something to do with carpentry and how it relates to the youth today. And fucking hell, I wrote it down somewhere. I thought I wrote it in the saved text messages on my phone, but I can't seem to find it. Yeah, but you can rest assured I was going to make some fantastic point about how the youth of today and their wheel-embedded running shoes compared to Jesus Christ and him rebelling against his father, Joseph the Carpenter. What was it again? Nope, can't think of it. Oh yeah, there we go. Now I have it. Jesus, of course, was rebelling against his father. Now, his father was a carpenter, and in those days, a bridge was the normal way of traversing water in those days, or else a wooden boat. And those bridges were all made out of wood in those days. And Jesus wanted to rebel against his father, Joseph, who was a carpenter. He wanted to do something not involved with wood. So he decided, I'm just going to walk across the water. I'm not going to I'm not going to walk across, use some device to transport me across the water, or walk across some sort of board. I'm going to go and interface with nature itself and walk across the lake and with my feet, like any normal creature would. I mean, I'm at one with nature. I mean, I am, after all, the son of God. That must count for something. I mean, I'm not some idiot. So Jesus went ahead and walked across the water, and that's what the kids are doing nowadays with their wheelie shoes. They refuse to partake in any sort of a vehicle, like their parents did. They don't want cars. They don't want buses. They've decided, I'm going to be the vehicle. I'm going to get these shoes that have little wheels built into the soles of the shoes, and I'm going to be a vehicle. I'm going to have wheels, and I'm going to ride around the supermarket on my little wheels, and I'm not going to take part in this this whole race to have a car. And I, for one, admire them for that. I think they're fucking brilliant. Hello, and welcome to Into Your Head's special presentation, How to Find a Career. I'm Neil O'Carroll's alter ego, and in this indispensable guide, I'll share with you my top tips on how to find your dream job. Now, let's start at the beginning. At the beginning of time, Adam and Eve were ecstatically happy. They had a lovely garden, some apple trees, and a god who for some reason was proud of creating two losers who spent all day rambling around an orchard with no clothes on. What more could you want? Then, one day, Adam became jealous of all the other males in the garden who were going off every day to a 9-to-5. The ants, who spend all day building things. The birds, who swooped in and out to collect food for their young. The wasps, who spent their waking hours trying to have sex with flowers for some reason. So Adam decided to seek the assistance of the local career advisory service. He found them very helpful and thorough. Their expert carried out all sorts of aptitude tests, analysed Adam's lifestyle, and looked stuff up in big books. Actually, that's not entirely true. He sat around for 2 days watching Superman, Superman 2, and Superman 3, and billed it as thinking time. After a couple of days, he called Adam up and told him he should get a job as a gardener. Adam was delighted at finally having something to strive for, the fucking idiot. It's all Adam's fault, you know. If he had kept his big mouth shut and not reminded God that he was doing nothing all day every day, we might all have gotten away with it. We could all be sitting in a parasitical garden right now, enjoying the apples with not a care in the world. Damn fucking idiot, Adam. Anyway, after a few weeks of working as a gardener for slave wages, surprise, surprise, Adam became unhappy. So quite rightly, Eve gave him a slap and told him to stop whining. 2,000 years later, I went for my first interview for the post of office junior at a shipping company in Dublin, Ireland. I spent the next 15 months licking envelopes and getting blood on them, folding stuff in a dark cell at the back of my office, and buying cigarettes for the boss. But I'm not bitter. No, I'm here to offer you all the benefit of my wisdom. So, here are a few priceless tips for picking a job that will make you feel happy and fulfilled. Think about where your skills lie. If you're good with money, become a con artist. If you're the affectionate type, consider a career as a prostitute. The cheese industry is booming. Have you considered becoming a cheesemaker? This portion of the lecture kindly supported by the Cheese Industry Council of Ireland. If you don't like getting up in the morning, consider getting a night job. Alternatively, move to another time zone and it'll all be cool. Don't expect to make a fortune in your first job. To compensate, steal a proportion of the takings from the cash register to supplement your earnings. Your employer is a millionaire. Nobody will notice. No matter what you do, you are destined to spend 8 hours of your day for the next 40 years wishing you were somewhere else. Don't expect too much from your career. Things like contentedness, fulfillment, and wages are for dreamers, not real workers. But, most importantly, have fun. And don't be cynical. Employers notice people who are cynical and pluck them out and remove them to stop them from causing trouble. Don't get noticed.
Hello, I'm Joanne Farrell. There now follows a voiceover by Dustin Meehan.
Hello, I'm Dustin Meehan. Some of you may know me as the voice that goes, "Sit, Ubu, sit," on your favorite family sitcoms. I'm here to tell you about the IntoYourHead.com guestbook. Everybody who's anybody is posted in the IntoYourHead.com guestbook, and you should too. Because you haven't truly partaken in the show, unless you've mingled with the humble and ignorant listeners such as myself. Visit the guestbook now at IntoYourHead.com.
Personally, I'm not into the whole traversing water without a vehicle thing myself. I can't even swim, so I prefer to use either a boat or a canoe or some sort of a bridging device, such as a cantilever bridge, for example, or maybe a tunnel. Now, a tunnel is technically a bridge. It's upside down. So if you were to imagine that the Earth was upside down, and you go through the tunnel under the sea, technically you're going in the bridge over the sea. I mean, who's to say what's up and what's down? The Earth spins through Earth and spins through the universe and rotates and spins and clockwise and anti-clockwise. And who's to say whether we're facing up or down at any particular time? So really, you could really be, if you're going over a bridge, you could really be going over the water or under the water or around the water in a C shape. Depending on which way the Earth is facing at the time. So really, to decide that a bridge is automatically going over water is quite arrogant of us. I mean, we don't know what way we're facing at any one time. And of course, this is why you have all this Australian rubbish in cartoons, where they tell you that they tell you in cartoons here in Europe that if you're in Australia, everything is upside down and people are upside down, and it's a wonder they don't fall off the planet into space. So who's to say we aren't upside down? I mean, I'm feeling a bit dizzy today, and I fell out of my chair. Who's to say that isn't because of my upside downness, or downside upness, or whatever the hell you want to call it? And really, I think really people are too cocky nowadays about their place in the universe. To go on about the fact that we live on Earth. Earth is just a pile of globulose spinning through space, and it could be anywhere at any particular point. I mean, since I started that sentence, we've probably moved halfway across the solar system and being shot at by several aliens who keep just missing. And I tell you, one of these days they're going to fire and aim and hit us directly where it hurts, you know. And that's when we'll probably blame it on some asteroid or something, and the same thing that supposedly wiped out the dinosaurs. The dinosaurs were not wiped out. There was no bloody Big Bang. The dinosaurs are still there. They've just decided to be quiet for a while because they don't like humans. Believe it or not, dinosaurs are afraid of humans. And it's true, dinosaurs were absolutely fucking massive, and there's half of them were the size of a mountain. But the mountains that you're looking at in those old films of dinosaurs, the mountains are actually little tiny little piles of sand on the beach somewhere, and it's just a matter of scale. The dinosaurs the average dinosaur was actually the size of your toenail, and you just can't tell that from the photographs, because the dinosaur isn't standing beside a human, and that's why dinosaurs were right to go into hiding in caves and things as soon as humans came along, because they knew damn well that as soon as one of them stood beside a human, everyone would notice straight away that the dinosaur was tiny, and that the human was about 50 times the size of the average the average brontosaurus. So they've gone into hiding. They don't want to be found out. They've managed to cleverly create this myth among all other species that they were the scariest monster ever to come along, unless you count those things that blow fire, but they're only fairy tales and things, they're not real. So as far as I'm concerned, well done to the dinosaurs for hiding and keeping the myth going and giving us some stories to tell our children other than those about Santa Claus, which are true. Santa Claus, he's another guy now. He did the opposite. He managed to he managed to convince people trick people into thinking that he's not real when in fact he is. And how he does that, I don't know. I think it's something to do with the beard. He wears a slightly different beard in every supermarket and tries to look like he's got some sort of a wig on or something. And it says, when you think about it, really, it's perfectly reasonable that a man who's been going around delivering presents for thousands of years would need to wear a wig. I mean, his hair isn't going to last forever. There's going to be some sort of accident involving, I don't know, some skin on his head got caught on the TV aerial as he was climbing out of a chimney. And the skin lifted up and some of the hair lifted up with him, and the skin and the hair came off and he got a bald patch that way. I mean, any sort of freak accident like that could have happened. There was a children's television presenter and ventriloquist in the UK in the 1980s, Rod Hull. He had a freak accident whereby he was adjusting his aerial on his TV aerial up on the roof and he fell off. So it could happen to him. If it could happen to him, it could happen to Santa Claus, who spends a hell of a lot more time on roofs than Rod Hull, I can tell you. Well, especially now that Rod Hull is dead. Now Rod Hull, by the way, was a ventriloquist who had, for those from other parts of the world, Rod Hull had a puppet called Emu, who was a kind of a big scary bird who'd go around biting people and stuff. And famously, Rod Hull and Emu went on a TV talk show in England called Parkinson with Michael Parkinson, and the bird started eating Michael Parkinson's face and all sorts of other stuff and nearly knocked him out of his chair. And everyone thinks it's great that you're so cute. Oh, look, the ventriloquist got this little puppet and it's eating the presenter. But in any other world, that would be called assault, and I don't know why he's allowed to get away with it. Now, you know, the whole thing of puppets and cartoons, you know, South Park is allowed to get away with having a representation of Saddam Hussein as a gay couplet with Satan. And while that may well be accurate, it's still something you wouldn't do in an ordinary sitcom with real human actors or in a movie, any sort of a live-action movie. But they get away with it just because they're two-dimensional. And technically a cartoon isn't two-dimensional anyway. If it's on film, the film is at least, a tenth of a millimetre thick. And so there's your goddamn third dimension there. And even if it's on a flat screen, all screens are slightly curved, so that gives them a bit of a thickness. So it's not fucking two-dimensional at all. Don't go giving me that shite. And I think I'll have a little space here while I go and drink some beer and use this space for editing purposes, such as, what editing purposes could there be? Well, there could be me moving bits of the show about and playing them in a different order to suit my needs, or it could be me putting in some music or some Joanne in between my segments. I mean, any sort of stuff like that. I mean, whatever, you know, it's you really don't need to know. Shut up.
Joanne Farrell for the Into Your Head Adult Learning Programme. Welcome to the second lecture in my series, How to Play the Banjo. Now that you've learned the basics and are becoming comfortable with your banjo, it's time to get more adventurous. I suggest you start by signing up for some bungee jumps, or maybe you could go on a blind date. But you could also become more adventurous with the banjo itself. Before you do that, though, you need to know a little more about the history of this wonderful, wonderful instrument. In the early 18th century, the immense peer pressure that has always been associated with banjos started to get out of hand. Every child in the country felt an uncontrollable urge to get his or her hands on one, And, as a result, the banjo factories worked flat out, 24 hours a day, including leap years, of course, to meet the demand. Banjo makers were in great demand and started to insist on exorbitant wages for their much-sought-after services. Something had to give. Then, the manufacturers became clever. Instead of making banjos in the traditional way, they bought thousands and thousands of unwanted ukuleles and simply converted them into banjos. The expertise of the traditional banjo makers was no longer needed, and they ended up on the scrap heap. Ukulele makers, on the other hand, had it made. Everybody suddenly wanted ukulele makers. But to cut a long story short, it all ended in tears when the kids suddenly decided they wanted Shrek 2 toys instead. I hope I'm not giving anything away for those of you who haven't seen it yet, but the storyline of Shrek 2 contains very few, if any, complimentary references to banjos. Possibly because the film company is in cahoots with the anti-banjo movement, as explained in my lecture in show number 9. Anyway, now that you've learned how to play the banjo, it's time to learn some advanced moves. As always, hold your banjo between your legs at an angle of 45 degrees to your right leg. Remember to check that there's nobody standing behind you. You don't want a nasty lawsuit just when you're getting the hang of your new pastime, do you? Of course you don't. Now, holding the top of the banjo's neck with your right hand in a Vulcan death grip and your left hand a couple of inches below, swing it right back and up into the air, enjoying the satisfying swoosh sound it makes. Then, off you go. You might even get a hole-in-one. And that's perfectly fine. There's supposed to be a hole in the centre of the banjo, just under the strings. It's something to do with sound or resonance or something. Anyway, well done. You're the next George Formby. I have been Joanne Farrell, and this has been IntoYourHead.com Adult Learning Programme.
Bit short of things to talk to you about this week. Not much has happened in my life or in the world, contrary to what I said earlier. I made up a convenient lie. I said that it had been a very eventful week in the world. This was purely for the purpose of conversation. I mean, half of this stuff I just make up. The other half I copy out of books and things. I mean the whole thing about emus playing the banjo, that was from a cartoon. I mean, I don't know which one. I think it was Roadrunner. Although Roadrunner isn't an emu, isn't he? He's a roadrunner, and the other guy in it is a coyote. Now, coyotes are a type of dog, and they're commonly mistaken for being some sort of a dog because of the shape of their ears and their cuteness. But no, coyotes aren't of the cat family. The cat family is very picky about who they allow into their family. I mean, if you've ever seen The Godfather, I mean, that's terrible. They're not cats, but I suppose. Actually, there's no. There is a cat somewhere in one of The Godfather movies. I forget where. There is some guy stroking a cat. In fact, there are quite a few cat references in films. There's that guy. Who's that guy, Betty? The guy who does the spoof detective things, where he's Austin Powers. Yeah, he's some sort of a thing with glasses, and there's a guy in that who strokes a cat a lot, and he's bald, and we're supposed to believe that his baldness came as a result of stroking the cat, which is absolutely fucking ridiculous. I mean, the lies that people make up about cats, just out of nothing but maliciousness and hatred, it's really absolutely appalling. And then in the same breath, these people who get away with this crap will give out about the Pope just because he criticised half of the country, half of the world's population, and called them all kind of evil and stuff this week. That's the other thing I meant to mention. The Pope managed to insult, what was it, half of the Earth's population, and as a result, half the Earth's population are burning down the churches of the other half of the world's population in order to prove a point about being peaceful. And as far as I'm concerned, this is all, you know, This is all stuff that I'm going to have to delete. In fact, I haven't actually saved it yet, so I could just, instead of hitting stop here, I could press cancel, and the whole last 2 minutes and 48 seconds of this program would be automatically deleted, and you would never hear, and I'd never hear again. In fact, I wouldn't even hear it once, because I'm not listening to what I'm saying at the moment. It's such absolute appalling crap. I mean, I can't believe the low standard of the stuff that I'm coming out with this week. Here we are, 3 minutes and 8 seconds of it now, and you're going to have to listen to this, because I'm not going to delete it, you know. I'm just going to, I'll stick it in somewhere, and I'll edit in loads of music and stuff, and make it sound like it's some sort of a clever, ironic thing where I'm pretending to be bad, but I'm not going to throw it away. That'd be wasteful. 3 minutes 27, and And here it is now, coming up to 3 minutes and 33 seconds. And that's a very biblical amount of time to record. I mean, Jesus was 33 when he died. And I'm sure, I've no doubt, it doesn't say in the Bible, but I've no doubt that at the moment when he reached his death, he was actually 33 years, 3 months, 3 days, 3 hours, 33 minutes and 3 seconds old. And, makes perfect sense. I mean, it's kind of half of 666, which 333 is half of 666666, which implies that Jesus is half of Satan. And I don't mean to be offensive to Catholics when I say that. All I'm implying is that it took God to create Satan. I mean, Satan was an angel who was sent down from heaven. He was kicked out because he broke one of the rules or something. I think he was he had a cat in his apartment or something. A bit like Pope Benedict. He wasn't allowed. He brought his two cats with him to the Vatican, and he wasn't allowed to keep them in the papal apartment when he moved in, because there's no cats allowed. And of course you're listening to that, and you're thinking, oh, he's on about cats again. He's made that up, some crap about the Pope not having his cats allowed in the papal apartment. But you go and look it up on the internet now, and you'll see that it's true. Frankly, I've been thinking of starting a campaign about this. That poor man, he's there now, going off on some wild thing this week where he got a bit carried away and criticised all Muslims as being evil or something. That's because he just didn't have his full powers of concentration on him when he was writing the speech. And who's to blame him? Every man needs his cat with him. It's like, you know, you can't take the cat away from the man and expect the man to be still 100% man. There's something, he's going to lose something. It's a bit like one of those operations that you have for epilepsy, where you separate the two halves of the brain and then put it back in, and it cures you of epileptic fits or something. But you're not going to be quite the same. Something's going to happen to you. It's the same. So it's the exact same if you take a man's cats off him. So as far as I'm concerned, pour out Pope Benedict, give him his cats back, and everything will be fine.
Want to stalk us? Visit the Stalkers Forum guestbook. Call or text message the Stalkers hotline 24 hours a day. Leave a voice message on our website. Email us. Or, coming soon, Skype us. Details of our ever-expanding stalking service can be found at our website, intoyourhead.com, or in the show notes on your iPod, which you're holding right now. No, your other hand.